broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
There's a lot more opportunity for rejection, you know, just by the sheer numbers, and for cyber.
I'll be buying them for my 8-year-old now.
I think it's terrible. My God.
Yeah. At this point, in addition to maintaining a no-fly zone.
I wouldn't say graphic. I'd say accurate.
Chicken crap.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and where we do radio for patriots by patriots. Yeah! Every night here, man, we bring you the news, and we bring you the perspective on the news that we think is needed. And what is that? Well, the first thing we have to do is we got to get it together here. We've got to get together as we march arm in arm, shoulder to shoulder, toward the future. Not the past, the future, which is, of course, a stronger, more united country, and one that can deal, for instance, with degenerates like Brad Rifkin. I don't want to say that this show is about dealing with degenerates, although you'd have to agree, guys.
I'll tell you on any given night.
Yeah, like tonight.
Like tonight, on some nights, we're dealing with degenerates, and that's what we are doing tonight. If you're watching our live streaming video of the show, you're watching Phil TV in HD, you see the video that we're featuring behind us this evening is Nazis and the Occult, just as a way of sort of a visual counterpoint to the program. 877-876-PHIL, although I don't want you to mistake the video. Yeah, it's not that kind of Nazi. This is American. These are American shoes.
Yeah, well, I know they're American.
These are American boots. They have nothing to do with the Nazi. Anyway, welcome to the program here in our final hour, our news hour. Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard along the way with us. And I asked Jason to shoot me a couple of stories this evening that I, for whatever reason, I hadn't gotten a hold of in the early going. And one of them has to do with the industry that is going south of this country. 10 industries, the U.S. economy recovering from a severe recession, according to the Wall Street Journal. But some industries are unlikely to ever fully bounce back. And I don't want to start the hour off with a massive bummer, and I really don't think that that's what this is. What I am saying to you, though, is for whatever reason, if you're involved in this kind of business, or if you're, I don't know, you know.
Well, like if you do business with them or something like that.
Yeah, if they're people that you rely on in your business.
Right. Then you may want to know what they are. And the reasons given here by the Wall Street Journal, I think this kind of thing is fascinating. I don't see this as bad. This happens. This happens, folks. We've gone a long time in this country and in the world. We've gone quite a long time without any real severe or jarring shift in how we do our jobs, what kind of jobs we have, how we manufacture things, what do we manufacture, where do we live. The last enormous event like that that we all learned in school was the Industrial Revolution in the mid-19th century. Kicked off in Great Britain, it made its way into every developed society at that time, including our own developing society. And it changed a lot. Transportation. One of the things that we talk about when we talk of the Industrial Revolution, of course, everybody talks about the fact that the cities got more crowded, the fact that there were more work-related injuries, that people were working around, for instance, heavy machinery. The child labor laws got to be very... child labor laws actually came into existence. We didn't have child labor laws. The other thing that happened, and you don't hear people talk about this, is that with the Industrial Revolution and the expansion of business, and one of the things that happened in the Industrial Revolution was that rail traffic, transiting by way of rail, you know, railroad travel, became far more prominent, and the workforce began to experience for the very first time a brand new face, if you will, the single, unattached female. For the very first time in the history of societies, women, by the millions, by the hundreds of millions, were beginning to travel alone. They were going places on their own. They were 20, 21, 22-year-old women. They're just out of college. I don't need to have a man on my arm. I'm not married yet. That doesn't mean I'm sitting down on the farm. There was opportunity for single women in the cities. And so we saw a lot of women beginning to travel. And if you want to talk about the empowerment of women, you could go further back than the so-called women's liberation movement, you know?
I don't know about that. That's pretty interesting and everything. Did I say that's women got free and stuff?
No, not at all, bud. I'm saying that was like that's the 19th century.
That was way long before they had liberation.
Yeah, but you said they was free and everything.
Well, they weren't free, but they were traveling on their own. They didn't have to travel with a man. You know, they didn't have, oh, wow, what are you doing? You know, it used to be very weird to see a woman traveling by herself. It wasn't safe. But women more and more became comfortable with the idea of traveling on their own. And so that was kind of a change. So these things happen, and I mention that only to say that whatever it is that we are beginning to evolve into, and I suspect that when we look at these businesses that I'm about to tell you are sort of, you know, going the way of the dodo bird, that is an extinct. You know what the dodo bird is, bud?
Some kind of animal don't exist.
Exactly.
That was hunted to extinction.
Yes, it was. Very good, Robert. The dodo bird was hunted to extinction by sailors, guys would stop off on some island, I forget where they lived.
I'm not trying to be funny, was it Dodo Island?
No, it wasn't Dodo Island, man. No.
What are you looking at me for?
Well, what do you mean Dodo Island?
Yeah, well, it's got to be called Dodo Island, it's called Dodo Bird.
Because it's called a Dodo Bird.
No, man, it wasn't Dodo Island, it was the Dodo Bird. They lived on some island, I don't know what, but the Dodo Bird is extinct because it was hunted to extinction, and that's just the way it goes. Speaking of that, we will be telling about an elephant hunt that they're flipping their lids over, not in Africa, in America. In Africa, it was cool. They're fine with it. They got too many elephants. But over here in the States, we got to stick our nose into everything, man. You know, there's such a thing as American imperialism, and then there's such a thing as American pain-in-the-ass imperialism. See, there's all kinds of American imperialists. There are the American imperialists of business. There are the American imperialists. Some people may have thought at one time American imperialism politically, the hegemony of America, blah, blah, blah. But we never talk about the other kind of American imperialism, the pain-in-the-ass do-gooder imperialism, the pain-in-the-ass environmentalist imperialism. Oh, you people don't know how to do it, man. We can tell you how to do it. Anyway, so here are 10 industries. There might be a little more, might be a few less here, I'm not sure. Here are 10 industries that are going south because of the changing economy. The biggest industry profiled by IBIS World is wired telecom carriers. Wired telecom carriers, largely being supplanted by cell phones and the internet. The dominance of the web and digital media also puts newspaper publishers, record stores, video rental companies on the list. Meanwhile, photo finishing also takes its place among the top 10 dying industries thanks to the growing influence of digital photography. Cheap imports are blamed for a decline in mills and apparel manufacturing. Companies that rent formal wear are also counted among the dying industries amid both competition from abroad and lower prices, making owning your own formal wear a more attractive option than renting. So more and more men and women are buying their own formal gowns or tuxedos. The only clear recession casualty that makes the list is manufactured home dealers. The housing boom led to a surge in the industry, but now, years after the bubble burst, the sector has continued to struggle. That is, they make houses and then just take it to wherever.
You're kidding.
No. You guys did that. They came and they went. And I'm sure they'll come back when the... I believe that manufactured housing will make a comeback, but only when we need more houses, you know, when the houses get sold. Who knows when that'll be. Textile mills, wired telecom communication carriers, newspaper publishing, apparel manufacturing, DVD game and video rental, because people are downloading, manufactured home dealers, video post-production services, because people are editing their own videos now. People are making their own movies now, you know. And anything you need, you can like our TriCaster that we have for our beautiful broadcast or our beautiful webcast you're looking at right now. Well, hell, we can edit all our own stuff. We have all of our own virtual sets. We have all of our own special effects. We have all of our own cameras. We don't need to go anywhere to do what we do. Record stores. Goodbye, record stores.
Nah, that part makes me feel bad, man. It used to be fun to go down a record store.
It did. It did. And who did I... who was talking? It really sounded like an old-timer. But he was lamenting the fact that there are no record stores anymore. There's just, you know, downloads. It was some artist, you know.
Yeah, it was like a guy from the 60s or something.
Yeah, who was that? You know the guy's name, Jace? John Bon Jovi. Yeah, a guy from the 60s.
Where's he from?
John Bon Jovi's like from the 80s. And by the way, the island of the dodo bird is the Mauritius?
Mauritius.
Mauritius? I don't know what the hell it's called.
I've been better if they called it Dodo Island.
Well, they didn't call it Dodo Island, man, so it's called Mauritius or something. Photo finishing, we mentioned, and then formal wear and costume rental. All of that is... Now, I will say this. That doesn't exactly sound like the Industrial Revolution, but it does throw a lot of people out of work. If you're not... Look at all those summer jobs that kids had at video rental places or post-production guys. What are cats going to do that have all of that skill when it comes to video production, video post-production? You know, what do you do with all of that? If you're not an artist, but you're just the guy who's a hands-on guy, you know. Well, you start your own company, have a production company. I'd make it like mobile or something.
Yeah, you could advertise and you'll come over and make a movie for people or something like that. I don't think it works that good, though.
I don't know, man. All right, we'll be back here on the Phil Henry Show, so that's just a little signpost as to the economy. Coming up, elephant hunt controversy surrounds a GoDaddy.com CEO. Activists call a video a gruesome elephant snuff film. Well, let's find out if they know what it is they're talking about. We come back here. It's our news and our news and views hour. Here on the Phil Henry Show, Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard with me. We're online at philhenryshow.com right now with live streaming Phil TV video
in HD.
The world famous Phil Henry Show.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show. Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, and what we're going to do is we're going to try to bring up a video, a very heart-rending video. We're going to try to bring it up on our video cast for those of you that are watching, and for those of you that aren't, it's okay because it's just an example of the story. There's a video that was made by a young lady who has been bullied and who decided to make a video that was without dialogue. It was just her holding these signs. Bullied Connecticut teen reaches out on, quote, haunting viral YouTube video. A teenager who attends Bedford Middle School in Westport, Connecticut, says the school has become an emotional hell for her. So she posted this video. But the video also, it's not exactly a big secret. Her mother knew about it. And I think her mother was quoted as saying, well, I'm very proud of her. Some of it was for dramatic effect, but it was valid. And she also had a friend of hers make a statement as to the bullying, you know. And so I got to talking about this during the break, you know, with Bud and with Robert and Jason. And you guys all encouraged me to talk about the whole bullying thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't talk about when you was a kid.
Yeah, did you ever get your ass kicked or anything like that?
No, I didn't get my ass. Well, I don't know. Did I ever get my ass kicked? No. But let's see. The name of this video is Words Are Worse Than... let me see here, man. Let me just... I'm going to enter something in here. W-O-R-S. Words are worse. All right. Let's see what this looks like. I don't know if we're going to be... Yes, here it is. Words are worse than sticks and stones... is the name of the video, and I'll roll it behind me here. But now here is the whole thing that I'm trying to say, actually. When you're a kid, especially when you're a young man, you socialize yourself to the point where you have buddies and you have other friends, and so at least that was my instinct. So when I first got to high school, for instance, and here's this video that I'm talking about, when I first got to high school and I encountered the first jackass that pushed me around, he was a member of my class. He was a freshman like I was, but he was a much bigger kid. And he tried to give me a hard time, and I just walked past the guy because I was a really skinny runt of a kid. It turned out that, you know, from grade school and also in high school, I developed a group of friends, and generally skinny little runts like me, if we have personalities, we always develop friendships with bigger guys, and next thing you know, those guys have got our back, you know?
Yeah, they like go out and kick people's ass?
We didn't go out and kick anybody's ass, but, you know, I always had my friend Richard, I had a buddy of mine who wasn't much bigger than me, but this guy was ready to just go anytime, any place. And so if anybody ever gave me a hard time, this guy's, you know, ready to fight him. And, you know, a couple of guys like that. So you socialize yourself with boys. That's kind of how it went. Now, I know that there might be some young guys or some young men who don't do that. I mean, they're very, very, and I think personally, I'm just saying personally, I think that by high school, you ought to be making friends, you know?
Yeah.
You ought to be making friends. You ought to have some friends. I'm not saying friends that'll kick ass, but what I am saying is by high school, you have your little social unit. See, a lot of kids will say, oh, they're stuck up, they hang together. Or maybe parents think the same way. But in a lot of ways, it's your way of surviving. You know, when you're a kid, girls do it. Young men do it. And if it's a healthy thing, you're not looking to kick somebody's ass. You're not getting together with three or four other guys and saying, now let's go out and pick on people. You're not doing that. For me, the guys that I hung out with starting in high school were generally people that made me laugh, and they shared my sense of humor, and we were squirrels. You know, we were maniacs.
Yeah, well, you're like getting in trouble and everything.
Yeah, we got into trouble. We did. But we got into trouble with stupid stuff.
Like what?
Like what? I mean, we had a couple of guys that just did weird stuff.
Yeah, what was that one time you said about a sign?
Well, that wasn't me. That was a friend of mine.
What did he do?
Well, I mean, this is like we would do this. We had a we had a big marquee, you know, one of those old school message signs out in front of the gym, and it would say, you know, this week, LaSalle versus St. Francis, something like that.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, one night, or early one morning, I think, got on the shoulders of another guy and rearranged the words so it said something along the lines of nude gathering.
You're kidding.
No, it said nude. Somehow he found all the letters so he could make a sign that said nude gathering. So anyway, he got in trouble for that. And we all did, as a matter of fact. That was the extent of the bad stuff that I did. So I have to think, on some level, I don't know how, but, you know, I grew up, I was a pretty healthy kid.
Yeah, but, I mean, you got in trouble and everything about getting suspended, didn't you?
I never got suspended for any, I got suspended once for behavior, but it was being caught off campus, that kind of stuff. You're not supposed to be off campus. We got in some guy's car, and we were down, I don't know, actually just having food. We were eating some lunch or something down at Eaton's, down at that restaurant, but when they caught us, they suspended us. The point I'm trying to make here is I think any healthy kid socializes as friends. And if you're a healthy kid, your friends, you don't go out looking to beat people up. But what that does is you have your group of friends. And so if there are kids that want to beat you up or there are kids that want to take you on, you have kind of safety in numbers. And so it becomes more of a situation. Well, if you pick on that one guy, you're picking on about six or seven other guys. I mean, Now, I don't know if girls are the same way. I don't know if girls bond the same way. But I do know that girls may go through high school experiencing that sort of solitary thing a lot more than boys do. Because I saw, you know, I don't want to mention any names, but I've seen people that I love very much who are very close to me go through that, and they're very healthy, normal people. That kid on the video, she put a video together with signs that I'm actually showing here on the show right now. Help, I don't cut, but I'm close. Do I look happy? Well, I'm not. I am bullied. Not a day has gone by without one of these words, including whore, fat, slut, and bitch.
Who, you?
No, not me.
The kid in the thing. Man, ain't you listening? Oh.
Me. So, And I'm a little confused about this girl in Connecticut. Is she doing this as an art project?
No, she's supposed to be the bullied kid.
Well, her mom said it was a little, a lot of it was for effect. It was very dramatic. I'm wondering if this kid did this for some art project. Anyway, that's bullying. Phil 101 in bullying. We'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. More to come. I hope so. We got 30 minutes to go.
Phil Hendry.
All right.
For Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show. Here we're with you every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. News talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and where we're producing radio for Patriots, by Patriots, every night. And we're online at philhendryshow.com. We got you covered every which way that you could possibly think of. Now, we're going to talk about elephant hunting, and here is a story that just screams for commentary and does so in a very shrill manner, because while we are worried that first world nations are not allowing developing nations to industrially or otherwise catch up, shall we say, while we're worried that we do too much here and they don't do enough, while we're worried that even though we have fewer per capita carbon emissions going into the air, we still need to cut it back even more, because there's a whole lot of catching up that the people in China and India and elsewhere have to do. While we're worrying about that, by the same token, we don't care about going down to Africa, for instance, and telling them not to kill their elephants, which they kill for the meat, and of which they have plenty of meat. The social network website Twitter is all abuzz because of a trip GoDaddy.com CEO Bob Parsons went on, where he shot and killed an elephant. An online video posted by the CEO to chronicle his vacation shows Parsons on an elephant hunt that he went on while in Zimbabwe. On the video, Parsons talks about rogue elephants in the African nation and how they cause damage to local crops. He went on a night hunt and he killed an elephant, chronicling the adventure in a four-minute vacation video, in much the same way John Huston, I'm sure, would have were he there and he was directing The African Queen.
What?
That's what that movie supposedly is about. You know that one?
What are you talking about? White Hunter and Black Heart?
Yeah, but what? Maybe you can scream it a little louder, huh?
What?
Shut up. Yes. Remember that movie that Eastwood made called White Hunter, Black Heart? It was about John Huston making African Queen with Humphrey Bogart and Katharine Hepburn. And, oh yeah, while he was down there making the movie, he wanted to go kill an elephant. He didn't go all the way to Africa just to make some rotten movie, man. He's going down there to kill an elephant. In fact, some people say John Huston made African Queen as an excuse to go to Africa so he could kill an elephant. I don't know what it is. You tell me. I'm not into hunting, but I got nothing against it. I'm not into hunting, but I wish you well. Maybe someday I would be into hunting. I don't know, you know. Just doesn't turn me on, but I'm not. I like shotguns. I like skeet shooting. But that's about it. That's the extent of what I like to do with a gun for recreation. I like to skeet shoot, you know.
Definitely go, pull!
Yeah. But hunting is a pursuit that some enjoy. Now, I do not condone, nor do I believe we have laws that really enable this much anymore. Going out and for laughs, killing something, and then dragging it home as a trophy, I think that's destructive. But by the same token, I'm willing to rely upon those in the know. And most of the time, those in the know, guess who they are?
Who?
They're hunters.
Well, what do you mean by that?
I mean, I'm telling you, some of the best environmentalists in the world are fishermen and hunters. They are, without question, in the top 5% of people who care enormously about our resources. Hunters and fishermen. Fishermen were instrumental in bringing back Lake Erie. Hunters were instrumental in bringing back deer in the state of New York. And the stories go on and on and on. Ducks Unlimited. You ever heard of Ducks Unlimited?
I mean, I know what the concept is.
What do you mean the concept?
There's a no limit to ducks.
No, it's the name of an organization, okay?
Oh.
Ducks Unlimited. These are duck hunters who brought back the duck population, a certain part of our continent. So you can't, you know, you just, you never know, man. You never know where your friends are. All right, so anyway, here is this guy from GoDaddy.com, this Parsons, and he goes out hunting for an elephant, and he finds one, and he kills the damn thing. He went on a night hunt, he killed the elephant, he chronicled the adventure. 5 shots from the team led by Parsons, and the bull elephant went down. Parsons later posed with the animal. Not anything different than a lot of people have done down through the years. The villagers celebrated the next day as they divided up the meat. On his blog, Parsons explains that he only hunts where it's regulated. In these areas, according to experts, there's no concern about the elephants becoming extinct. In fact, the bigger problem is that there are too many of them. But that's not a good enough reason for the many tweets circulating, because everybody's a genius on Twitter. As a matter of fact, when all there is to expend is hot air, everyone's a genius, including me.
Yeah, you expend a lot of it.
I certainly do. Now, what do you mean I spend a lot of it? I mean, I do, but...
Yeah, well, it's your job.
Yeah, it's my job. My job, yeah. Anyway, many of the tweets are critical of Parsons, and some animal rights activists who don't know their ass from a hole in the ground are calling for a boycott. Those always work. Some people want to know why such a successful businessman would want to use his vacation time to shoot elephants. Because it's fun! One activist called the video a gruesome elephant snuff film. Fox Channel 10 in Phoenix talked to Parsons by phone on Tuesday. He said, quote, I kind of figured that this might happen. So be it. I'm not ashamed of what I did. All these people are complaining that this shouldn't happen, that these people who are starving to death otherwise shouldn't eat these elephants. You probably see them driving through a McDonald's cutting a steak. These people don't have that option.
Getting a driving McDonald's cut a steak.
Don't you understand the point the man's making?
Yeah.
Don't try to be funny, okay? Parsons says it was rewarding to help the villagers, and he plans to do it again next year. The director of conservation at the Wildlife World Zoo in Litchfield Park, Arizona, Dr. Gray Stafford's statement was the following. The human-elephant conflict is real. About 75 to 100 elephants a day have been killed at human hands worldwide over the past 40 years, and about one person a day loses their life due to the increasing numbers of conflicts between animals searching for food and poor communities trying to survive. The ever-expanding human population on a shrinking planet makes these deadly conflicts more likely in the future, and while elephants may, quote, win a few battles, their species most certainly will lose the war unless we humans change our ways fast. Otherwise, the extinction of the largest land animal on Earth is inevitable. While some hunting organizations are fabulous conservationists, he mentions Ducks Unlimited here, many countries do a poor job of managing their natural resources and wildlife. Now, you mentioned Ducks Unlimited, which is an American organization. And then he goes on to say, many countries. Well, you know. As for hunting, you know, see, here's the thing that I will not abide, and I don't expect any of you to abide this. Do not, for a second, recognize the right of an American conservationist group to tell you what to do with your life in another country. You know, you talk about fascism. These bastards, it's an amazing thing how clueless they are. They talk about imperialism. They talk about neocolonialism. They talk about hegemony. What about their hegemony and their fascist imperialism over the starving peoples of Africa because they got a thing for elephants and they're going to enforce it beyond the borders of America into the countries of Africa or elsewhere? It doesn't matter what the issue, what the animal is. Any kind of an animal, any kind of a country, any kind of a continent. We have American environmentalists. We have first world developed nation environmentalists that will extend their influence and their dictatorial manner to any country in the world and tell them how to live, tell you how to live, even though you are out of the country, in their country, being hosted by them. In this case, Mr. Parsons was in Africa. He was in Zimbabwe, being hosted by the people of Zimbabwe. And then, in point of fact, these were a deprived, economically depressed people that he was assisting, believe it or not, by shooting that elephant. Now, you try to get that through the thick head of an American environmentalist. the soft freaking, I said thick head, more like the soft cranium of these people who they won't make an effort to understand culture. All they understand is Fuzzy Wuzzy was a bear. That's it, man. That's the extent of their understanding. So this very fine doctor of conservation, Dr. Gray Stafford, there in Litchfield, Arizona, at the Wildlife World Zoo, which, by the way, Doc, what's your zoo doing for those animals lately, huh? Any of them want to get out maybe and maul some customer? I'll tell you, these zoos and these doctors that work for them. So anyway, Bob Parsons, you know, I can only, again, reinforce this message. We have an example of the kind of colonialist thinking that many times liberals will accuse other people of engaging in. And those bastards, I mean, they don't even see it. The irony is so thick, you can cut it with the proverbial knife. The idea that they are presuming to discuss with a starving people in Zimbabwe whether or not they ought to be killing elephants. Oh, we're not telling them. We're telling the American. Oh, I see. So this is a conversation for the adults, huh? And the children don't need to hear it? Is that it? Why don't you go down and engage those people? I got a better idea. If you're an environmentalist, like, and of course, these are not environmentalists, folks. This is Twitter, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say, Matt, I've been half those people, they don't even know how to spell environmentalist.
Good point. You go on Twitter, man, and people are talking about the environment. First of all, learn how to spell it. Here's a great one, man. Once you organize something on Twitter, get some money together, go down there and feed those people so they don't have to go and kill elephants.
They're thinking that they hired that guy to come down there and kill an elephant or something?
No, but, I mean, Bob Parsons went on an elephant hunt, and he did the most responsible thing I think you could possibly do as a hunter. Well, look, I want to kill an elephant? Yeah. Well, you have a rogue elephant population problem? Yeah. And you have a problem with people, they're starving? Yeah. Let's kill an elephant down there and give them the meat. Sounds good to me. I mean, you couldn't do it any better than that. And, well, we get the statements from the Dr. Litchfield Grays and the Jack Ball this and...
Name's Dr. Stafford Gray in Litchfield.
Whatever. That's a wild thing, man. It's wild. You know, I would never want to hunt an elephant. I don't want to hunt an animal because it's my own personal thing. You know, I just want to kill an animal. But I will say that it's a noble pursuit, especially when you do that and someone benefits. And it happens right here in this country, too. Whether there's a hunter who's out in deer season or moose season or any season in between, and they will kill an animal, and the meat generally is donated to some community of needy people. There's nothing wrong with that. All right, we'll be back here on the Phil Hendry Show. This is a story that we first talked about when it happened, and it's still in the news. There was a woman who was murdered, and the EMT took a picture and posted it on Facebook. Now the parents are suing Facebook. This is going to be a very crucial, key, pivotal lawsuit. And we'll talk about it when we come back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. For patriots, by patriots, it's the Phil Hendry Show.
You're talking about a giant beaver.
Hold on. All right, we talk about, and I was going to get into this. Maybe I'll get into the Facebook thing, maybe not, because we still have a little bit to talk about. Well, what should I do now, man?
Go ahead and talk about it, man.
You know, when we talk about hunting, and I don't want to get too crazy on this, but I wonder where do the natural events of life end and the things that man can control begin? Because there was a mammal hunted to extinction in Australia 40,000 years ago, and it was called the Diprotodon. The Diprotodon, otherwise known as a giant wombat, which Bud thinks is funny.
It is funny.
All right, fine, it's funny. You done laughing?
Yeah, they also call a rhinoceros wombat.
Yeah, and a giant beaver. I think it's funny.
Anyway, the Diprotodon was one of the largest mammals on Earth. It is a or was a mammal. It was huge. It was 12 feet long. It was 2 tons. You can imagine that. It's the biggest, ugliest damn thing you've ever seen in your life. They called it the rhinoceros wombat because it had sort of a rhinoceros face. It weighed about as much as a large rhinoceros, and it looked a bit like one from far away, especially if you weren't wearing your glasses. Well, you couldn't wear glasses back in those days because 40,000 years is when it went extinct, and it was hunted to extinction by the Aborigines of Australia.
Yeah, but they needed it for food.
Oh, they needed it for food. Did they really? See, at what point do we have too many people? Who makes that decision? Some doctor at a wildlife zoo in Arizona? Is that what goes on? I love it when these people, again, we have to put this squarely in the camp of the liberals because, and I, you know, God bless you, I hope you enjoy it. Well, you guys know so much. You tell people how to live, how much to eat, what animals to hunt, what animals not to hunt, who should have this many people, who should have that many people. You're all over the map, man, telling everybody how to live. You tell us here in the United States what kind of energy we can use, what kind of energy we can't use, but it doesn't end at our borders. I often make the mistake of thinking that, you know, liberals are just as dictatorial as any far-right person you want to think of, any far-right thinking person. But actually, they're more so, because they're not only telling us how to live, but the very people that they think they benefit, they're telling them how to live. Don't eat that, don't eat this, eat that, eat those. Don't be friends with him, don't be friends with that guy. All those people that were benefiting from Bob Parsons killing that elephant in Africa, well, geez, somebody better send him a telegram, man. You're not supposed to hang out with that guy. He's bad. Some dude cutting into a nice, big, fat elephant steak.
Yeah, I'm going to tell that guy, man. Better not eat that.
Yeah, you go ahead. You go on down there and tell that cat not to eat that. You go down there and tell that guy who's about to bite into a top sirloin elephant.
Porterhouse for two.
Porterhouse for two. Who's about to feed his whole family. See, human beings do what human beings do. Now, some people say, well, it's stupid. People shouldn't do this. And look at what we've done. And look at how we did this. And look at how we did that. Well, all right, so we make mistakes. You know, that's the hallmark of life. The hallmark of life is you misstep. Even people who believe they're saving the planet misstep. Well, you grow so much corn, then something else happens, and something else happens. And we're finding out now that ethanol isn't the way to go because all of that corn, and then the economy is upset somehow, not to mention the environment, because now we find out that when you cut down all of these corn stalks, something else happens, God knows what. I mean, has everybody really thought this thing out? Do you really know what you're doing? The answer is no, you don't. So we move forward based upon our needs, based upon how we can survive. And that begins with food and shelter. That's where it all begins, folks. All of these other marvelous things that we want to talk about, whether it's saving the planet, global warming, saving elephants, saving savings bonds, whatever, all of that stuff is horse dung unless there's food and shelter. Food and shelter. And in the case of the people there in Africa, we're applying our 21st century Americana to a people that are still wrestling with the problems of my God, they're wrestling with the problems of the hunter-gatherer, if you want to get right down to it, because Africa is not an agricultural paradise. It isn't. There's farming there. But it's a very narrow continent. Everything is north-south. You're going from one latitude to the next. You can't, you know, trade crops in Africa. They hunt in that on that continent, you stupid Twitterers. So Australia, not quite the same situation, but this was 40,000 years ago, so they didn't have anybody telling them the right thing or the wrong thing to do. They wanted to eat. Now, the Aborigines lived, as it turns out, on a continent, Australia, that is, for the most part, one big fat desert, man. the fertile areas of that continent all ring the outer part of the that big island that we know of as Australia. So when they were down there 40,000 years ago and the land bridge was gone and the, you know, the oceans filled in and there's just a bunch of aboriginals and they're hunting and gathering. That's what they did. Well, guess what? They hunted one of these animals to extinction. Hey, it happens.
Yeah, what are they going to do about that on environmentalists and everything?
I don't know and I don't care, but they hunted the diprodon or the diprodutio, or I don't know what it's called.
Called the diprodut... Dippity-do.
What do you mean, the dippity-do?
That's where they got it from.
Yeah, they got dippity-do from that.
If you guys are lying to me...
I swear.
The dippity-do. Phil Hendry Show is produced by Jason Rantz. Our technical director is Rick Johnson, and our associate producer is Dan Northcraft, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show at philhendryshow.com. Don't forget, you can pick up our Phil Hendry Show coffee mug today. And check out our website after the show. We'll have our show log up and all that, man. We'll see you tonight. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. Dippity-doo.
That's my famous call.
Phil Hendry.